Now, last week we were discussing the journey of Abraham, and we said that when you take a look at the Torah, at first sight it seems quite simple. God tells him to leave the his land, and he will make him into a famous person. Everything sounds beautiful. But then when we look close to the text, we find out that there's a problem. And the problem is in the very verse itself, in 12:1, where God says, go, leave the land, your land, the land of your father, and go to the land which I will show you. But God does not show him anything at that point. So the question is, how could Abraham possibly fulfill this commandment, and what did he do? Okay, now Abraham later, in a later verse, discusses the history of his odyssey, and that is in 20:13, when he's speaking to Avimelech. Okay, so let's take a look at that verse there, 20:13. Now, I don't know what your translation is, but this verse over here is a little tricky. You must know a little bit of Hebrew in order to get the correct interpretation here. Now, the verse states as follows, that when Abraham was trying to appease Avimelech, trying to explain himself, because Avimelech apologized and complained to Abraham, how could you put me in such a situation? So Abraham was being very kind to him, and Abraham sort of apologize. And he goes over the history of his journey. And he says, this translation, I'm using the Jerusalem Bible. Actually, the Jerusalem Bible has the correct translation. And it was when God caused me to wander from my father's house. So, of course, the word in Hebrew is hisu, that's the word, and it comes from the word to'eh. To'eh means to wander aimlessly. We have that same word again in Genesis, where Joseph, when he was searching for his brothers, and he was in a conflict, and what happened was that he really didn't want to find them because he was afraid of them, but on the other hand, he had to listen to his father's command. So it says, and a man found him, and behold, he was wandering in the field. Same word, to'eh. To'eh means wandering aimlessly. That's actually what the meaning of the word is. That verse, if you want to know where it is, the verse is in Genesis 37:15. And a man found him, a certain man found him, and behold, he was wandering in the field. It means to wander aimlessly. So we see over here, when we look closely, when we scrutinize the Torah, again, the Torah demands scrutiny, when we scrutinize the Torah, we find it's not as simple as we think at first sight. And over here, Abraham is recounting his journey, and what he's stating is that when God caused me to wander aimlessly from the house of my father. So now we understand the question that we raised before. When God told Abraham, leave your land, leave your homeland, So he really didn't know what to do. God says, go to the land. Which land? I'll show you the land. Well, what is Abraham supposed to do right then? And Abraham realized that he has to leave, and God simply expects him to wander aimlessly until he will show him where to go. Now, it just so happens that Abraham intuitively went south towards Israel. Okay, of course, he was at that time in Haran. I don't know how you pronounce it in English. H-A-R-A-N. Okay, that Haran is really 10 miles north of the Syrian border. It's in Turkey. He had to travel from there south to Israel, a distance of 400 miles. Now, he wandered aimlessly, but he happened to wander in the right direction. Intuitively, he went south. Did he have a sense intuitively? How did he happen to do that? We don't know. I'm not going to be mystical about it. I guess a mystic would say that he had some sense of the holiness of the land was drawing him there. Could be. I mean, I'm not going to to venture into that area. But somehow or other, he wandered in the right direction. Now, let me let's scrutinize a little further this verse, okay? God says to Abraham, leave the house, your land, your birthplace, and the house of your father to the land which I will show you. Now, let's take a look at the preceding verse, which is the end of the chapter of Noah. Now, take a look in two verses earlier. That's Genesis 11, verse 31. And what does it say? It says, and Terach took Abraham his son, and Lot, the son of Haran, which was Terach's grandson, and he took Sarai, who was the wife of Abraham, his son, and it says, and he went out with him from Ur Kasdim, that's Ur of the Chaldees, to go to the land of Canaan. So and he went to Haran, and he stayed there. Okay, so it's interesting. Apparently, Terach himself had plans of leaving Ur, and going to Canaan. And somehow or other, he had plans to do that. But what happened was, what the reason was, we have no idea. Why should Terach, who was a successful man in Ur, why should he want to leave his homeland of Ur and travel to Canaan? But apparently he didn't travel directly west, because Ur, you see, the city of Ur is in Iraq today. It's a little bit north of Kuwait. It's in Iraq, and if you would go due west, he would really hit Israel. But instead, they traveled north to Ur. That's a distance of about 600 miles. As I said before, Haran is north of Syria in Turkey. So we don't understand what the reason Terach had for leaving his city of Ur. He was respected there. We do know the Midrash says that Terach was actually a very strange man, because he informed on his own son, Abraham, and to Nimrod. And Nimrod tried to kill Abraham, and Abraham escaped through a miracle. That the Midrash says he was thrown into the, as you probably know, into the fiery furnace, and he emerged unscathed. Maimonides does not mention anything, question whether the Midrash is to be taken literally or not. Maimonides simply states that he escaped miraculously. It doesn't say what the miracle was. Ibn Ezra is not too happy with the literal interpretation of the Midrash. But at any rate, all agree that somehow or other he was almost put to death. His life was in jeopardy, and he did escape. Now, as you know, as you would expect, I mean, especially you, people can appreciate this, the most dangerous thing that a person can do is to go against the religion of the land. In this country, fortunately, this land has no religion, has many different religions. But you can imagine, you can see from within your own framework what happens, and this is different now than it was 20 years ago, as I was discussing with David last week. And you can imagine what it was in those days to go against the religion of the land and to simply state that everything is false and nonsensical. I always considered Socrates to be a very courageous man at his trial and after the trial, and he always stood out in my mind as one of the most courageous men. But when I really thought about it, I had to come to the conclusion that Abraham was much more courageous than Socrates, because Socrates didn't touch the religion. He was afraid. When they accused him of not respecting the gods, of saying that the moon is made out of rock, Socrates backed down, and he stated he doesn't teach such things. But Abraham didn't. Abraham was not afraid to speak the truth, in spite of the fact that his life was in jeopardy. And Abraham's concept was that if your idea of God is distorted, then your entire life has to be distorted, because God is the source of everything. So if that source is wrong, your whole life is going to revolve around the false notion, and it will be absolutely worthless. So when Abraham discovered God, he didn't keep it to himself. He shared it with everyone, to the point where his own father, who was, according to the Medrash, actually, his father was a manufacturer of idols, and his father was so upset that his father turned and informed him. There's an interesting thing. The Rashi states that Terach at some point in his life repented. And how does Rashi know? Because God says to Abraham, you will go to your fathers in peace. So Rashi comments, his father is an idolater, and God is telling him he's going to go to his father. It's not a proper expression. The expression to go to your father means to die. But Rashi and the Talmud are very sensitive about the expressions. You don't say that his whole life was against his father. So how could he? How could God say to him that this is a wonderful thing? You're going to be buried at an old age, God says to him, and you'll go to your father. But your father is an idolater. It's not appropriate. So Rashi says from here we see that Terach repented. And apparently Terach at some point in his life recognized the God of his son, Abraham, and Rabbi Soloveitchik wanted to say that this was this is indicated in the Bible, the biblical text itself, where it says that Terach took his son and left Ur, which was his original town, where he was successful and famous, and he had access to the king. So he apparently started to realize that his son was right, and he recognized the God of his son Abraham, and he was upset at the fact. He was really depressed about the fact that he spent his life in Ur, which was actually a very highly civilized city at the time. Ur was very civilized. The archaeological digs in Ur showed a civilization where they even had quadratic equations. They were advanced in mathematics, and it was a metropolis. And apparently, because of his recognition of the God of his son, and the fact that his son had to escape with his life, he left, and he took Abraham, and he was going to go west to Canaan. But he traveled north first, northwest. And he went to Haran, which really was a pastoral town, wasn't a metropolis, and it's difficult for a person ordinarily to leave a big metropolis, especially when he's successful, and to go to a pastoral society where, you mean, it's really quite a letdown. I mean, people usually go the opposite way. But he was apparently content to do this because, as the Medrash says, that he repented, and this Rabbi Soloveitchik points out that this text actually indicates that he did have a change of heart, and he took his son Abraham and he left Ur, everything he had there, and he, for some reason, we don't know why, he decided to go to Canaan, but apparently he traveled northwest, and he came to Haran, and he stayed there. More details of his journey we don't know. But now let us take a look at what the Torah teaches us in the two verses later again. Where God says to Abraham, God says, leave your land and your birthplace and the house of your father. Now, the question is, how could God say that when he had already left Ur a long time ago? Of course, his father Terach took him out of Ur, took his son and his other son, Haran, and Abraham's wife, and they were already away from Ur. So they're actually 600 miles away from Ur. So what does God mean when he tells Abraham to leave your land? He already was away from his land. I mean, 600 miles is quite a distance even today, and in those days it was a monstrous distance. So Rashi again comments, and Rashi says, how could God say leave your land? He says, didn't he already leave there with his father, and he went to Haran? So Rashi says, this is what God said. God said to him, move further away from there and go from and leave the house of your father. Okay, so according to Rashi, the text means God meant and leave the house of your father, and by doing that you'll be distancing yourself even further from your land and from your birthplace. So actually, according to Rashi, the text is not really accurate. The text should have stated, leave your father's house first, and then you will be distancing yourself further from your birthplace and from your land, from your land and from your birthplace. The order in the Torah seems to be opposite of what it should be according to Rashi's interpretation. And I mean, Rashi's interpretation is well taken because Rashi's just basing himself on the text which we have before us. So that is a question that we encounter at this point. But let's go a little bit further and let's analyze what, and let's try to analyze a little further, and we'll see that perhaps through further analysis we'll understand what exactly the commandment that was that God gave to Abraham. And I think if we're successful, we will find something that's quite remarkable. Let's take a look at another aspect. Let's analyze this first from another aspect, okay? And forget about what we did so far, and just let's look at it fresh. Now, it says, God said to Abraham, leave your land, your birthplace, and the house of your father. Now, the question is, why do we have to have all these terms? Okay? So, again, Rashi explains that Rashi says as follows. Rashi says that, excuse me, let me just find it. Rashi is like this. Rashi says, God did not reveal the land to him immediately. Where it says, he says, go to the land where I will show you. So Rashi comments, Rashi says, God did not reveal to him the land immediately. Why? Because God wanted to make him love it. It should be desirable. There's something that he loves in his eyes. And Rashi says, and to give him a reward for every single word. In other words, every word he received a reward for. Leave your land, you got a reward for that. Your birthplace, another reward. The house of your father, another reward. He says, and Rashi comments, Rashi says, we find this style, this method that God used with Abraham, he uses in other places as well. For instance, he says, take a look at Genesis 22. Okay? Take a look at Genesis 22. We see that God commands Abraham to sacrifice his son, where God tests Abraham. Now, in 22:2, God says, take your son, your only one, the one that you love, Isaac, and go to the land of Moriah. And there you will bring him up as a sacrifice on one of the mountains. Again, it says, which mountain doesn't say. It says, which I will tell you. Okay. He knew the direction, but he didn't know which mountain. Now, over here again, God uses the same exact method. God says, God doesn't say take Isaac. He says take your son, your only son, the one you love, Isaac. So Rashi says, if you study these verses, you see that same method being applied in the case of Abraham's taking of Isaac to in the Akedah, where Abraham takes Isaac for a sacrifice. And he says, and Rashi continues, and he says again over there, God doesn't tell him where. He says, I will show you in the future. He says, you find the same kind of idea with the prophet Jonah. Because God says to Jonah, he says, go to Nineveh, and he says, tell them, give them the speech which I will tell you, which I will speak to you. But God does not say exactly what that speech is at the time. Okay? Now, what exactly does all this mean? What does it mean? What's the purpose in doing it in this manner? Okay? The explanation is that God, In giving Abraham a command, or in giving Jonah a command, the way God relates to man is God is man's teacher. He teaches the prophet. He raises him to a higher level. He puts him in a different state of mind and causes him to grapple with his emotions and to rise to a truly high level where his mind is, and his knowledge of God is his only guide. Okay? Now, over here, what God did was, God told Abraham that he should leave his home. Where should he go? Doesn't say. Wander. He should wander around. But you notice God says, leave your land, your birthplace, and the house of your father. And for every one of these things, he received a reward. Why should he receive a reward for every one of these things? The answer is obvious. The answer is that God, when God told Abraham to go on a journey, this wasn't just a physical journey. This was a philosophical journey. It was a journey of perfecting himself. What he was telling Abraham was the following. You see, Abraham was a great discoverer. He discovered God, basically. He discovered God. Now, when Abraham discovered God, the Rambam, Maimonides, he gives a vivid description of what happened. He discovered God, and then he shared the idea with other people, and he would write, in those days, he would write articles, and he would give them to people, disproving the idolatry. Idolatry is false, completely false. Now, there are two steps involved in disproving idolatry. One is to show what rationally what we mean by God, the source of all creation, and that's one. That's very nice. But you know very well that a person can have an idea of God as the source of creation, and he could still be an idolater. He could use physical means. He could have idols. There are many idolaters that believe in God, but they say these are representations. These are representations. This reminds me of God. What Abraham had to show the people was not just the philosophical idea of God, but he also had to show them psychology. He had to teach them psychology as well. He had to show them that the ideas that they have and the sacrifices that they're making, killing their children, and the whole idea of a deity, of a God, and why they need this material figure in front of their eyes is because they're projecting onto reality something that doesn't exist. They're trying to satisfy certain infantile emotions. And these emotions are completely wrong, are completely false. So Abraham really, in discovering God, he discovered God. The discovery of God involves two things. It involves the idea of God, an abstract, a philosophical, but it also involves a lot of psychology. It involves showing a person that these things that you believe are true are really just projections from your own imagination. These aren't real things. And Abraham studied the human mind, and Abraham's discovery, really, if you just put Abraham's discovery in a capsule, I would say Abraham discovered that phenomena are not just outside of the self. And here he was in a city, really, that was advanced, and mathematically and architecturally, and in those days, for those days, Ur was a very advanced city. And this city, they recognized, they weren't stupid people. They recognized that you have to deal logically with the external world, and there are phenomena that you have to deal with. And they were intelligent people. But what Abraham discovered was that there were other phenomena also, internal phenomena. It's not just the external is phenomena, but the internal in man is also a phenomena, and you have to study it and analyze it. And you must use your mind with regard to your own emotions, just like you must use your mind with regard to the external world. That was really Abraham's discovery. Now, what God told Abraham was the following. God told Abraham, you're the one that made that discovery, that the emotions of a person are subject to analysis, that you can understand them. You must focus your mind on your emotions. And if you see an emotion which doesn't make sense, and you trace it back, you see where it comes from, it's nonsensical, you can't, that's not reality. That you have to grapple with that in a different kind of way, but you can't allow that emotion to cause you to make a decision. If you come to a decision, for instance, that someone is not good, and then you check in your mind, you see, why do you say this person's not good? And you see, it's based simply upon an emotion. There's no basis in reality, and it may be difficult. You may dislike this person. You may hate this person. You don't know why you hate that person. Sometimes a person dislikes somebody, doesn't know why he dislikes them. Not because the person is evil, it's simply he's different. Something bothers him about it. It's hard sometimes to trace it even. But the fact is that a person has to be on a level where he must recognize this is just an emotion. This person didn't do anything wrong, so why do I dislike him? It's my own emotion. Maybe I'm envious of him. Maybe there's another reason why I dislike him. And a person has to grapple with those emotions and study them and not allow them to direct his life. that is really what Abraham taught your children to the God. You think that this is a religious action, that you're doing something for God? This is nonsensical. You're looking for something to do to make you feel good. But there's no basis that God, and you have no proof that God, that this is what God wants. This is for, this is you, you have a, you want to satisfy some kind of guilt. You want to feel that you accomplished something. But there's no basis in reality. You can't follow that emotion and destroy human life. So Abraham was the one that discovered the analysis of the human mind. What Abraham, what God told Abraham, to Abraham, what God said to Abraham is as follows. Now that you've come this far, you have to make one more step. You have to remove from yourself a certain emotional attitude that you have until now. And that attitude is the feeling of security that an individual has with regard to their own land, with regard to a place that they lived in all their life. A person, and you have to realize that in those days, especially in those days where there weren't that many cities, actually, to leave a city and to go and to wander off into the desert, I mean, into a desolate country, was like losing your whole sense of security. You know, the Talmud states that when a person travels on the road, that he doesn't have to pray for 3 days. Because in those days, when a person traveled on the road, it was a danger. I mean, you were away from civilization. And when a person would come to his death, and the person was emotionally exhausted. So the Talmud states you can't pray to God unless you have the proper frame of mind. So the Talmud says that if a person travels on a journey, he's not obligated to pray for 3 days, because he shouldn't pray, actually, because he doesn't have his wits about him. Until he calms down. It was a major undertaking. For us, it's hard to imagine, because we live in our society. In those days, you have to put yourself back into what it was like in those days. So what God told Abraham was, you have one emotion that you still didn't work on, and that is your sense of security that comes from your country, from your birthplace, and the house of your father. So what God told Abraham was, you see, that's why it goes in gradations. First it mentions the country. That's a certain emotion. Then it mentions the birthplace. That's even a closer tie. I was born in this city. Really, it's part of my life, part of my youth. A person is always attached very much to his early youth, his memories that give the person a sense of belonging, roots. And of course, the most powerful one is the house of his father. A person's attachment, primary attachment, from infancy on, is an attachment to his father and his family. That is the closest, most powerful tie. That's what makes a person feel significant. That's where a person is not just another number in his own home. He's respected, he's recognized. It gives him a sense of security. So God told Abraham, that's why he reversed the order. He told him, because God was speaking on an emotional plane. The emotional plane, that's what Rashi says, to give him reward for every step. What God told him was, break away from those emotions. You still have emotions. You may have left Ur, but you still have emotions that attach you to Ur. You're still thinking about Ur. It's still in the back of your mind. And your father's house still has meaning to you. It gives you there's a certain sense of security that you have. You are not an ordinary person. Your life is on a higher plane than anybody else. You have to remove yourself completely from any sense of security that you have. An ordinary person, God wouldn't give such an instruction to. He couldn't take it. God deals with each person on their level. But Abraham was a man that was rising to the world of mind, to the world of God's wisdom and knowledge, and God didn't want him to be attached to any kind of emotional weakness. He said, there's still one weakness you have to overcome. How are you going to overcome it? So God said, the method is as follows. You leave your house, leave where you are now in Haran, and by doing that,